Listeners, welcome. This is Sound Only. I'm Justin Charity.
And I'm Micah Peters.
We're your Sound Only co-host, here to record our deepest, darkest thoughts about, honestly, respect. This week, we're talking about respect. We're talking about rappers and respect.
Paid dues, etc.
etc.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. Tis crunchy yet soft. Tis filling yet has a hole. Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's. Huzzah! A toast to breakfast.
Respect and rappers. We're talking about Young Thug, first of all. But we're going to talk about respect and musicians and rappers and artistry from a few different angles. But we're starting with a conversation about Young Thug and Andre 3000. Of Outkast.
Yeah. Young Thug went on T.I.'s new podcast, which is titled Expeditiously.
Can we explain why it's called expeditiously? I hate T.I. so much.
Okay.
Why this
okay, all right. So let me tell you, let me holler at you for a second.
Let me elaborate on the etymology of the podcast, the
granular etymology of the podcast lexicon. You know what I'm saying? Because, like, anyway, T.I. has this way of speaking, of using 15 cent words. I mean, $15 words when, like, you know, just a regular one will do.
It's,
you know,
called multisyllabism. It's
like he takes a long walk to go a short distance in order to prove, I don't know. I guess, like, you know, intelligence. There's actually a really funny bit in the Rhythm and Flow competition show, which I know you didn't watch. That was on Netflix, where he was one of the panel judges along with Chance the Rapper and Cardi B.
Yeah.
And they had, straight to camera interviews, for their interstitials, they'd have weird produced segments where they were, like, in transit to someplace, like, in a car and having, you know, casual conversations. So in one of these, Cardi B is just kind of like, how you know so many big words, you know? Like, where do you get all this, like, you know?
She hit it with the Isaac Choate interview question.
Just kind of like, you know, you quit using all those big words for you choke on one, but, like, in a loving way. And he was just like, well, Cardi, I've spent a lot of time in prison. And, you know, I had a lot of time to read, which I think was, like, the most I have ever liked post-prison T.I., to be honest. But anyway, expeditiously. The title of the podcast is Expeditiously because, you know, that's just how he talks. I am literally amused by your sentiment. Anyway, on the Expeditiously podcast, Young Thug went on the Expeditiously podcast, and I did not listen to the whole thing. I'm just going to level with you. I just saw the clip that was floating around online where Young Thug was talking about how Andre 3000 is kind of standoffish in, you know, the way that Young Thug talks, which is incredibly colorfully and kind of hard-edged and, you know, without many equivocations, kind of in absolutes.
Yeah. And meanwhile, T.I. is pushing back on it because T.I. is trying to do his rap elder diplomat, you know, shtick where he's like, y'all should make music together. What's the problem here?
He's always trying to keep the peace, you know?
I'm doing a Foghorn Leghorn impersonation.
I feel like both of us trying to talk like T.I. is just like, you know, Shutterstock photo.
Yeah, yeah.
Like big courtroom lawyer. Like,
yeah, 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 big courtroom. Yes, that's right.
That is exactly how.
Your Honor.
Yeah, Your Honor, if you would.
Dismiss the case forthwith.
Yeah, exactly. In any case.
He's being diplomatic though. T.I. is sort of in this interview. Diplomatic. He's saying, wait a minute, Andre 3000, you know, Atlanta, you, me, Andre, Atlanta.
We're all together.
Yeah, gang, gang.
Yeah.
And Thug is being a dick about it. He's saying something like, well, he brings the comparison to Elton John. Right?
It's an amazing just because of the way that like Young Thug is, I mean, he doesn't switch, like, you know, patterns of speaking or points of view as he's talking, as about how Elton John came to him and was talking about, like, ask when Gucci got out, apparently. It was just kind of like, yeah, man, like, you know, like, but let's make music. Let's make music.
Yeah, because this was a thing in the news for, like a year ago, right? This sort of, I remember the first quote of Elton John talking about how he likes Young Thug's music and, you know.
Yeah,
it was like
I feel like it's always the young, the thug-a-sance, but I mean, I think this is after the country album, quote unquote. But I don't know. There are pictures of the two of them, like wearing Gucci together. It was like a very fun time. Then there was like then High came out of that, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful song, but. Thug's hang up was the fact that like Elton John came to him as a fan and didn't like have any sort of
he had no pretensions.
He didn't have any pretensions about the fact that he wrote some of the biggest power ballads of all time or whatever.
Yeah.
He was just like, hey, I like that thing you do with your voice. Maybe we should do it on Wax together. And Thug liked that. And I mean, like, honestly, Thug is, I guess, like, as a point of disclosure, we both, I think, are giant Thug fans.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, like, he is like a hothead and kind of a dumbass about, like, I mean, it's just about just doing simple things about public relations, you know?
Yeah, and the things that he picks to be a dumbass about
is it just doesn't make sense, you know? Yeah.
But in this case, he picked sort of being kind of stubborn about Andre 3000 and sort of, he basically, so he raises Elton John as a counterpoint, right? And he says, he's talking about Elton John because he's like, Elton John, you know, I didn't know this guy. He reached out. He said he liked my music. Elton John wanted to kiss ass. Andre 3000 wanted his ass kissed.
Because, you know, like, he's still trying to rap even when he's talking, you know? And so it's not, he could have said that so many different ways, but he chose to say it in a very pointed way. And
it's notable because it's not just like, it's not just, this is some faux pas thing, right? Like, it's notable because of the idea that, again, and Andre, Young Thug, T.I., there's this sense of Atlanta lineage. And then also, I think specifically, obviously, with Andre 3000 and Young Thug, there is a sense of continuity stylistically between the two of them that's easy to perceive. Right?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, they're both the sort of Southern rap weirdos who are kind of gangly and gender funky.
Androgynous. They do things because they feel like it and not necessarily because there's any sort of motivation beneath it. Like, you know, our tour rappers in, you know, the purest sense are like, they leave a lot of room for you to project onto them. So there is like a sense of continuity being broken, like a sense of disappointment followed swiftly by like a kind of large internet fallout where people were just kind of like, well, how dare Young Thug? Because like, Andre, there's no you without Andre 3000.
I mean, like, but is he wrong? Like, isn't it understood? Listen, I think it is generally understood that between Big Boy and Andre 3000, that Big Boy is maybe the nicer member of OutKast.
Yeah, I mean, like, Big Boy wants to just make music with people that he thinks are cool and has been doing so for, you know, the better part of the last decade. And Andre 3000's like public image at this point is
he's Goemon, you know, from Lupin the Third.
He's Goemon from Lupin the Third. Exactly. Like, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't actually take buses. He sits on top of them, like with his flute or whatever, you know, following the vibrations of the, okay, I'm exaggerating. But anyway, like, he literally does just go, he's just spotted in Super Marcus with a flute, you know? I don't know if he's like showing up to any reunions or like weighing in on any of the ongoing conversations, but that's like his cachet at this point. And before that, over the last decade, I mean, he journeys from the mountaintop to give these like screeds in these hyper dense verses that just kind of feel like state of the rap union addresses.
Yeah. Yeah. The one I think of the most maybe is like Andre's verse on Royal Flush from like several years ago at this point. But that, you're talking about that style of verse, right? Where it just feels like a run-on sentence slash the I Have a Dream speech slash, you know, that kind of deal.
Yeah, but even going
he gets in a
back
pocket
to...
that is rare for other, you know, other rappers can't really get in the same pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very specific kind of navel-gazy shit talk.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, it was present even when you, like, with the more, like, the pop stuff in the mid-2000s. Like, say, for instance, his verse on the White Tee remix. I remember specifically being in the front seat of my brother's expedition with the Alpines in the back. After going to Champs and getting like the 3 for $19.99 White Tee deal thing and listening to the White Tee remix and Andre 3000 doing that thing where he gets on somebody's song and, you know, disses them. Like it's gotta be a weird vibe in the studio if you're on the White Tee remix saying that thing looked like a nightgown, tank that thing two sizes down. It's just kind of like, well, damn.
That's what Thug is reacting to. Thug is rising up on behalf of everybody who's been watched by Andre 3000
of everyone that walked into Foot Action to get for those deals or whatever. I'm okay. It is like, yep, Thug has a point in that. Like, that hurts people's feelings, you know. That
it's rap. We don't care about
like it's yeah. It's rap music, but I mean, like, I understand it. You know, also, it's not like it's not keeping with, I mean, the dominant mode, which is that, you know, you eat the old in rap music anyway. Like, it's so it doesn't, I mean, like, obviously Thug was going to say something like that.
Yeah, this is true. I think apart from the stylistic continuity, the regional continuity, it's that sense too that Andre, you know, Andre has a similar sense of defiance about him that Thug has about him.
Mm-hmm.
I said at the top, we're talking about respect this week. And obviously Andre has his moment, you know, in the 90s at the Source Awards, getting up there, talking about how the South got something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of brings us to the other thing we want to talk about this week, which is award shows and rappers. I'm gonna regret asking this, but Micah, please talk to me about the Grammys. I'm supposed to be mad about the Grammys. Tell me what to be mad about. We got Grammy nominations.
Yeah. Where to begin? So one of the things, one of the points of contention recently has been the best rap album nominations, which people will bristle at. It just seems like there's like a statement being made or something to read onto it, because the nominees are Black Habits by D Smoke. I haven't heard that one. Have you?
D Smoke, no.
Okay. All right. So Alfredo. Alfredo, Freddie Gibbs, The Alchemist, A Written Testimony, which we talked about, King's Disease by Nas, The Allegory, Royce of 5'9". So the average age of the best rap album nominees is 41. Like, the youngest nominee is like 35.
I'm also gonna, can I raise another specific objection though, before we go further? Is the Nas album. Listen, that Nas album has two great songs and a lot of butt on it. And its main sort of advantage is that it's better than the last couple of Nas albums. Otherwise, pretty bad on the merits. Okay, continue.
So there's that. Another entry in the long saga of the Grammys. I mean, just blindly pick at the Hot 100 over the course of the year. It is sort of actually weirdly, if you squint and then stretch to the outermost bounds of the known universe, sort of representative of how rap has been this year, in that there's been the emergence of like Griselda as like a legitimate star-making presence. I don't know. I like the fact that there's like a rap crew that does traditionalist rap from Buffalo. That's like one of the things that we talk about most in popular rap music is weird and more like representing in the best rap album category, but
still feels kind of random.
Like, it still feels random, even though like Alfredo is one of the best rap albums I've listened to this year. It doesn't really feel like, you know, the best rap album category is representative of what's most popular.
Well, I will say I interviewed Bill Frymuth, like head of awards. I think he's outgoing at this point. He went to some, like he had a rocky tenure at the Grammys head of awards. But years ago, I talked to him at Complex, and he really stressed this point that to him, it's important that the Grammys are a peer award, right? That the whole idea is that, you know, it's the way the nominations come together, the voting happens. It's all, you know, people who work in the industry putting forth their own work, but also the work of their peers. And that's supposed to be how you're meant to understand the excellence that the Grammy is awarding. It's not popular commercial sentiment. It's supposed to be about, this is what the industry itself thinks is the cream of the crop, right? And I had a conversation with him about that. And yeah, I do remember feeling at the time, and I definitely feel sort of looking at the Grammys in later years since that conversation, that's just not how it feels whenever you're looking at the actual nominees. The nominees actually do feel kind of like somebody put on a blindfold and threw darts at the Hot 100.
I mean, yeah, it is.
And maybe Rap Twitter, threw some darts at Rap Twitter, yeah.
It is a list of your quintessential rappers, yeah. You know? So I mean, like, they hit the mark in that sense, but, you know, but that's just one thing that was going on with the Grammys. It's not like a new conversation that we're having. In any case, it is another entry in a long, ongoing, circular discussion that, you know, goes nowhere about how award shows don't represent taste when that's not, you know, their central aim, their professed central aim in any case.
It's about taste, but it's also about respect. It's funny, like the Grammys, you know, in so much as I saw consternation about it, I was actually reminded of an email we got a few weeks ago. It was actually about the BET Awards and about Megan Thee Stallion. And yeah, I'll just read the email. It's from Reed. Listener Reed, thanks for writing in. Reed said, I noticed that some corners of the internet were upset that Megan Thee Stallion won the BET Artist of the Year award instead of Lil Baby. But why are they upset? Was Baby more deserving of the award? Or is this another example of rap fan sexism? What's the more nuanced way of seeing this? Or did I just fall victim to XXL Instagram clickbait? So, like, that kind of thing, right? Like, the kind of argument, like, first of all, I do think people get weird about Megan Thee Stallion in particular.
Yes.
As people who have, you know, I don't know. We've talked about Meg on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. I agree with that particular diagnosis. I also, though, that question got me thinking a lot about how it's like a cycle of addiction in a weird way, right? The sense in which people, I think there's a broad consensus among people who actually follow like these genres of music, like especially if you're talking about the youth genres. Set jazz aside for a second. You know, let's set aside Christian Scott's nomination.
Just just
we're gonna set aside like the Glassers and the Christian Scott's
on the way out of the produce aisle. Just picked up a Meyer Levin. That's those are the jazz nominations.
No, you know what I mean. But it's like if you're talking about you're talking about the youth oriented genres, right? Certainly hip hop. It does seem like there's this death spiral of every year, everyone agreeing that, you know, the Grammys have bad taste. We all agree. And yet there is this sense in which the Grammys, despite itself, is able to perpetuate it perpetuates enough of a reputation that people feel the need every year to come back and have this conversation all over again. Like they got neuralized by Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones. And they forget they forgot that last year they decided they don't care about this. And look, I think hate watching.
Emphatically. Every single time.
Every time. And it's one of those things where I think, you know, you watch one decade of that happen and you go, hate watching. I get hate watching. I know how hate watching works. Then you watch a second decade of it happening and you go, no, seriously, though, there are other things you could be doing with your time than talking about award shows that you, quote unquote, don't care about. And yeah. I say award shows because this is obviously this sort of hate cycle, right, is bigger than the Grammys. You could apply it to the Emmys. You apply it to the Oscars. You could apply it to the VMAs. You can apply it to so many different things. And it seems like even the Grammys themselves, right, even Bill Frymuth would tell you that the point is not about critical acclaim. It's not about taste making. It's just a trade show, right? Like the head of the awards would tell you that. We could tell you that as observers. So help, like, how do we get out of the cycle of thinking of the Grammys or whatever else as something other than just a nice production that you watch, not because you have any faith in the nominations and the awards, but just because you like the pageantry of it. I feel like that's the actual consensus that we're striving toward and yet never arrive at.
We never get there. Yeah.
Why?
I guess, you know, then it would no longer be unctuous bullshit. There wouldn't, like, in order to, like, have that conversation, you have to admit that you care only about the most vapid things about it. And that there's almost no like reason to be having the ongoing discussion about it except for it's music's biggest night. Let's see if Jason Derulo falls down the stairs again. You know?
But that's the thing. What's vapid about that? Watching Jason Derulo, that's entertainment, baby. Let's go.
It is entertainment, but
beautiful
like,
gowns.
You know that
a beautiful gown
like,
is still a beautiful gown.
Like having some turbocharged opinion about it is a way to valorize yourself as like a serious music listener. I just don't think that
I think nobody who is trying to have an argument with Bill Frymuth about PP cocaine, that you're being the opposite of serious point. You know what I mean?
Okay, you didn't see all the sarcasm I put on serious. That was a serious TM. That was a serious with the Mo anime drawing, like, you know, face on it. That was the serious that I was talking about. The serious that we laugh at.
Oh, okay. That's fair. Yes. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Yes. However, I just like it's you either have to like kind of arrive at the conclusion that the award shows are like reductive and don't like are not the but it's just like you can't escape them because they're and the entire point of their existence is validation, which, you know, artists are going to seek out. Like
but you say you drag an artist into this, and there is an artist we'll drag into it in a second.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I will
I'm
say
sorry,
that the
I, was getting
I think
a little
the problem
ahead of myself. However,
right. No, but I will just say that it's one thing to me if Taylor or somebody throws a fit about nominations. Because to me it's like you're the artist. Like I in the sense that this is an industry thing, this is and you know, you look at this as hell yeah, in the same way that a journalist looks at the Pulitzers and thinks, this is the award for what I do. I get if you're a musician or an actor and you look at these award shows and you take them a little too seriously, because you should take them a little too seriously. That's different if you're just some random person, you know, if you're a fan. If you're a fan, I just don't really understand the channel of validation. That it's not a direct channel in the same way that it is for the artist. And that's why I don't get why fans let themselves feel so wrapped around the finger of people who aren't even trying to have, they're a not conversation even trying to make them. It a thing about taste. Yeah, it's not, they're not even talking to you.
I don't know. I actually like top five conversations. I don't really get how they perpetuate themselves, yet they persist.
This episode is brought to you by Thomas's.
Thomas's presents Pondering the Bagel with Tom.
Oh, the paradox of the bagel. 'Tis crunchy yet soft. 'Tis filling yet has a hole. 'Tis a vehicle for spreads, but only travels from toaster to plate. Thomas's, huzzah, a toast to breakfast.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
The artist that we were talking about before, what is the one that you just, you know, look at you flaring your nostrils already. Like it's, we're going to have this conversation.
Artist.
The Weeknd who said that you owe me the Grammys that he did not, you know, mention on Twitter. Just like, you know, this was a, you know, general statement after the best album, best artist, such and such, the big categories of nominations came out for the Grammys. And The Weeknd, who has really committed to his bit over the last, like, I mean, like, he's done the full Oscars campaign for, like, you know, the best album or whatever Grammy. He's been wearing the same outfit since the album came out.
He's doing a bit.
The bandages bit around his face and like the red leisure suit thing that he's been doing was not enough to win him the prize that he wanted. So he took to Twitter to be like, you owe me and my fans an explanation. And there was a lot of like discussion about whether or not he did deserve like some sort of recognition, like at least a nomination. Like that it's a little, the thing.
Why?
That I
make the case. Why?
Exactly.
Why am I like, what is this?
I can't make one. Okay. Because I was just like, listen, I get that. Like The Weeknd's album, I wrote about it. It was, you know, I like like Blinding Lights is a very good song. Like I like the sort of, this is what your brain does on drugs at 3 a.m. sort of like him finally fully committing to that, you know, brand of music. Like when it's, you come back after the club and it's just kind of like one of the people just won't turn down, you know, like it's we're trying to watch this movie, but you won't sit down. And that this is basically like what's going on in that person's brain. That's what the music sounds like. It's good for about three or four of the songs to me personally. But I don't think it's good enough for there to be like, you know, and for him to be a call celeb. And I said as much on Twitter and got the response was just kind of like, well, it's a little weird that he didn't at least get one nomination. And I really could not, if I had a week, come up to, I did. I could not come together with a reason why there would be a nomination for The Weeknd or his album. And not, and I don't mean that pejoratively.
No, I think people think The Weeknd deserves an album specifically because, you know, it's sort of like the method acting parody thing. You know, the Jared Leto walking around putting poop in people's sandwiches or whatever. And, you know, it's, I think the thing is people think, man, The Weeknd's been doing this bit. And it's really the same bit for every one of these rollouts ever since I Can't Feel My Face, right? Like,
yeah,
he's just been doing the bit. He's doing The Weeknd bit for so long. And you feel like somebody deserves, you know... You gotta put cookies out for him like Santa at this point. He won't fucking stop doing his fucking Weeknd bit. I fucking hate The Weeknd's bit. I'm tired of this dude. It's the first time I've agreed with the Grammys about anything.
It's just
Dua Lipa getting nominations and The Weeknd not is the first time in my lifetime I have felt like I am on the same page as these people.
Oh. No, but I mean, like, I'm sorry. I feel like I've been dancing around the bit that he's been doing and I haven't fully explained it, but there isn't really that much to explain because
it's The Weeknd. He's not that deep.
Oh man. Right. Because the bandages on his face aren't just bandages because they look cool.
He's a cokehead with lame ideas. That's the bit.
Yeah, the bandages are, you don't get it because it's about like, him being like so desperate to see this woman in the wee hours of the morning after he's off like three different types of liquors and a cocktail of pharmaceuticals. He gets in his car and then what happens? But it's not about promoting drunk driving. He made sure to specify that at the end of the explanation. But anyway, yeah, he's been doing that for several months.
For several years.
I was talking about the specific.
I know you're talking about this. I am talking about the essence Invisible of The Weeknd as a Grammy begging bit that I could not be happier to see go unrewarded and thus unfulfilled in this particular cycle of awards nominations. I don't know why I'm so worked up about The Weeknd in particular.
I don't know, but it's just like he's not the only one that had the anti-Grammy, like, right. You know, screed over the holiday weekend, what have you. There was also Drake is just like, I'm not showing up. There was Justin Bieber who was like, you know, my album is an R&B album. I used R&B elements on it and I don't want to be considered as a pop artist. I'm not coming. It's just like a lot of the same things that we were talking about before.
You know, I mentioned Andre 3000 earlier and the Source Awards and him rapping for the South against New York and West Coast hip hop in the 90s and him saying, you know, getting up there and talking about how the South got something to say. Now, in some sense, that's a pronouncement about, you know, that's a pronouncement to the wider world of hip hop beyond just any one award show. But that is, you know, the context for Andre 3000 saying that is him being at an award show, being awarded in that case, but also kind of being in his feelings about awards, you know? And
yeah,
that's like, for some reason, that scans to me as cool. That scans to me as an artist standing up for himself and his region and his influences.
Mm-hmm.
And yet everything like modern about special pleading from artists about award shows is deeply lame and I hate it. And I don't know what is the difference. Like, I feel like such a hypocrite, or I'm just sort of, is it a generational thing? Cause I just, there's nothing about Drake complaining or The Weeknd complaining about this stuff that makes me feel like they are Andre 3000.
Think that probably it is a bit of like, you can attribute a lot of it to time. Because I mean, the Source Awards were the event where you saw all of these rappers together in one place. And it wasn't a thing that happened often. Like it actually felt like, you know, a super PAC convention or whatever. Like it was. So, and I mean, like now the Grammys are the AMAs, are the VMAs, are the ESPYs. I mean, like, it just feels like, you know, added validation on top of like obscene commercial success, which is like, not to say that that wasn't the case before, but it just feels so, yeah, at this point, for reasons that aren't like exactly easy to articulate, but you get what I'm saying, right? Like, there's something about like the constant presence of like these people and the campaigning that happens for the Grammy Awards now.
It's icing on top of icing on top of icing. Yeah. Yeah. It has that quality to it where you're just like, man, we can go sit down, Abel. Like, ain't nobody trying to hear you talk about this. Come on now.
Yeah. The album, like, is fine. You know,
it's a 6 out of 10, whatever. 5.5. Please sit down, sir.
Yeah. It's just, you know, there is something off-putting. And then also, like, ultimately something satisfying about trying and, like, you know, face planning. Like, I didn't really care who won the Rookie of the Year award last year in the NBA between Donovan Mitchell and Ben Simmons. I really didn't care, but I began to root for Ben Simmons because Donovan Mitchell and Adidas were campaigning for the Rookie of the Year award and saying that how could Ben Simmons be a rookie if, you know, he was if he just sat out his first year in the league. Like, he's been in the league for 2 years because he was on the NBA roster last year. And so how could he be? It's just like, shut up. That's annoying. That's your natural reaction to that. You know, it's just not, you know, don't go complain to the manager. Just do the thing on the field of play, so to speak.
Yeah, Abel, do the thing on the field of play, so to speak. Thank you, Micah. That was very eloquent. Thank you. Micah, what's the Meg nominations? Meg Thee Stallion?
She got 4 nominations. She got Best Rap Song and Best Rap Record and Best Rap Performance for the Savage Remix.
Mm-hmm.
And also Best New Artist.
What'd you think of the new album? Good News.
I mean, I've, like, you know, it's just not that, like, I don't think the vibe is right for me to pick up the Meg Thee Stallion album. Because
you sound
like
T.I. You said that mad diplomatically. Okay.
I know I said that mad diplomatically because it's just like I listened to it and I wasn't really feeling it the first time. I just wasn't in the right headspace. I was listening to BK the Ruler. Have you heard that Love Santana album?
No.
There's this record on there called A Girl Is a Gun that a friend of mine put me on to, and it's just like the it's very not the speed of the Megan Thee Stallion albums. This like 20-year-old queer Brooklyn rapper that like does this crazy rhyme patter shit, and it just sounds like, you know, eating a bowl of nails with no milk for breakfast type rap music.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go to the Meg Thee Stallion album and it's like 4 to 5 straight songs of industry beats.
Industry beats. Oh my God. I mean, you're not wrong.
But... Yeah, I mean, it's just I just don't get why she is opting for this regionlessness with the, like, her major releases. Because, I mean, like, it was the same thing on her first debut album.
I feel you. I think on Good News, I think this is true of her in general, but definitely on Good News, she sometimes, like, some of those beats are tacky, but I actually like Good News because it sounds kind of tacky. Production wise, like, you know what I mean? There's just sometimes where you have a taste for cheese, and I think there's cheese on that album. There really is. That's the way I'd put the appeal of the album, is you really have to be in the mood for some production cheese.
It's obvious, like, it's good rapping. It's just like, it's the production is American cheese, which isn't even really cheese, you know?
Yeah, but I fuck with American cheese. Listen, fat boy from Central Virginia, leave me alone. we can, you know, That's just a little side note. We've put respect on all. Give Megan some awards. You know, the weekend.
You know,
no awards for Abel.
Who cares, right? Meg, it's just like, let Megan. I, you know, yes. Good for Megan.
Good for you, Megan.
Good for you, Megan. The weekend needs to sit down somewhere.
Yeah, we gonna sit down somewhere. I'm just a charity.
And I'm Micah Peters.
We'll see y'all next week.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.